Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, Law Office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. Today is Thursday, August 2nd. This is a community conference call where we attempt to answer the questions that you have posted or asked during the call to the best of our ability. This call does not mean that you have retained us as your lawyers, nor does it obligate you in any way, so this is basically an information session. Do note that this call is being recorded, so I advise you to keep your identities confidential. There is no need for you to give out more information than is absolutely necessary, especially your names, etc., because this call will be made public later. The way I would proceed is just the way I normally do. I will first answer the questions that have been posted. Then I'll ask people if they have any questions that are follow-ups on the questions that have been posted. And then, after that, if there are any new questions. So once again, keep your identities confidential. That's probably a good idea. That said, let me get started with the questions that have been posted. Monica has posted, one of my colleagues has posted for somebody who says, I am a naturalized U.S. citizen and the only son. Parents went for immigration interview in Mumbai. Admin processing is going on in the consulate. So basically, the green card is being held up because they want to document the previous overstay. Ages 84 and 81. They also want to know, what can I do? Here's what the consulate is looking for. They want to make sure that your parents at no time stayed in USA without applying for an extension in a timely manner for more than 180 days, because then they become subject to 3-year bar. If they stayed past 1 year, they become subject to 10-year bar. So that's what the consulate is getting at, okay? If at any time they stayed in USA, even without applying for an extension of their tourist visa, less than 180 days, there is no problem at all. What I would recommend is contact your congressman's office. I will actually post a video on this. I was planning to do that anyway, so this is a good time. By Monday, you'll see a video up which will talk about how to contact your congressman's office for immigration-related issues. Okay? I'll give you a step-by-step analysis and things that you need to do. Next question is from imi_image. Currently working for a client through Green Card Sponsoring Consulting Company on H-1. In 2 weeks, he or she wants to be taking a full-time job on EAD under AC-21. The client they work for want them to work for at least 3 months more before they let them go for the full-time job. Okay? You are planning to work on 2 jobs for 3 months. One is the client of the existing company, and the other is another full-time position on AC-21. I am doing AC-21 without the knowledge of GC sponsoring company, as they have been mean to me. They might cause trouble if they come to find out. Okay? Well, that's fine. So technically, client job is on H-1, new job will be on EAD. That's not the way it works. Once you switch to EAD, then the H-1 gets into suspended animation. It is no longer awake, okay? So you are on EAD, and on EAD you can, of course, do 10 jobs simultaneously if you want. And if you ever wanted to go back on H-1, you can have your new company sponsor file an H-1 for you, and you go get an H-1 visa stamping and come back on it. So that will get you back on to H-1 from your EAD. You had 4 questions. Once I start using EAD for a new job, will I be automatically converted to EAD for my client job too? Yes. Is there a way for me to convert to EAD with GC employer without them knowing? Yes. Technically, they are supposed to update the I-9, but I don't think this is going to be a major issue for you, at least not in my mind. So you could... Again, technically it's a violation, but it's a violation that hurts the company, not the employee. So I don't see any problem with it. Can I work on both H-1 and EAD at the same time? And the answer I just gave you. How do I work for both the jobs on EAD? I think this is fine. You can work with the client at the same time, and the old employer, I don't see any obligation on your part to inform them unless you have some kind of a contract with them. As far as immigration law is concerned, I think it's okay. There's a technical violation of the I-9, but the violation goes to the employer, and I don't see how that affects you. This is a kind of a loophole or a little gap in the regulations and the laws. Somebody in your situation should not be chastised or hurt in any way. Okay? Next question is AMITBH, I guess it must be Amitabh, 6546, EB3 to EB2 porting. I have EB3 priority date of November 2007. I only had 3-year degree from India, so I was not eligible for EB2. Now I have a master's degree. Somebody told me that I can apply in EB2 but cannot port my old PD because at that time I was not eligible for EB2. That's not true. That's not true. There's no such rule. There is no law, no law whatsoever that says if today I want to start a new green card under EB2 and port the priority date from my EB3 case, I must be or must have been qualified for EB2 at the time the first case was filed. No such law. So, yes, you can port your priority date. Same gentleman has asked another question. I'm assuming it's a gentleman. I'm in the 7th year of my H-1B, and I have extension until Jan 2015. If I apply for H-1B transfer in regular mode and leave my current employer, it might take 3-4 months. My old employer might revoke my I-140, then I cannot do an H-1B transfer, and the answer is yes. The best thing for you to do is you start your H-1B premium processing with the new employer. Do not join them until the H-1 is actually approved. Okay? What happens is once you get your H-1 approval transfer over to the new employer, even if the old employer revokes your I-140, so far, USCIS has never taken back an extension that they have already given. Okay? So then you are pretty safe, and the new employer starts your new green card process. It should be okay. You should be entitled to a 3 years extension based upon your approved I-140. Okay? Next question is H-1B amendment requirement. Same gentleman, I guess. I have a lot of questions from one person. I prefer that we keep it to, you know, one or two questions per person, but I guess we have enough time, depending upon how many people have other questions. So it's okay, but, you know, try to keep it to as few questions per session as possible. We are okay with this one for now, actually. Is it mandatory to file for H-1B amendment if employee is moved to a new client location? Isn't getting new LCS sufficient? The answer is it depends upon the distance as well as the job description. If your job description remains the same and the distance between the two jobs, old client and new client, is normal commuting distance, 30, 40 miles or less, it's okay to just do LCA amendment. But if the job description has changed substantially or if the distance between the old employer and the new employer, let me rephrase that, old client and new client is more than normal commuting distance, Colorado to California, you have to do an H-1B amendment. Okay? So H-1B amendment is required under two circumstances. One, where the jobs are located more than normal commuting distance apart, and two, where the job description has changed. Okay? Otherwise, LCA is enough. Uday01 wants to know, I-140 category and priority date porting. Company A applied for labor, and you've got your I-140 485 pending EAD with that, and you got a 2006 EB3 priority date to that company. You went to Company B invoking AC-21. Company C applied for future employment, and you got an approval of I-140 in 2007 in EB2 category. And the priority date is August 2004, which means your earliest priority date right now is with company C, the future company. So your questions are, can I use both EB2 category and also the priority date of company C? Well, if you are going to work for company C, yes. Can I just use the EB2 category of company C? I'm not quite sure what you're thinking. Can I just use the priority date of company C? I'm confused. Well, first of all, you are always entitled to the earliest priority date that you have, whether it's EB3 or EB2. So you are entitled to the 2004 priority date. Okay. You're entitled to EB3 if you go through AC21 of the EB3 case. Now remember, you are also eligible for AC21 through the EB2 case. There is no law that says you have to actually join the future employer in order for you to get your AC21 rights. So here's what you could do. You can use EB2 AC21 for the 2004 date and move over to a job which is same or similar to the EB2 job. Okay? Move over to a job which is same or similar to EB2 job. If you want to stick with EB3, you can just let USCIS know that you want the 2004 priority date on the EB3. Normally, what they do is they run, at least that's what they tell us, they run monthly sweeps. So they will automatically give you the earliest priority date to which you are entitled. Okay? So two choices, stick with EB3 and get the 2004 priority date, no problem with that, or do an AC21 for the EB2 job. That's the way I see your case. B. Sundar wants to know, I've got an F1 visa. I'm arriving in the first week of August to University 1, but I want to join University 2. Is it okay to do that, or should I do it after one semester? As far as I know, the experts on this, Mr. Sundar, are your designated school officials. So you can talk to the DSO of school 2, university 2, and see what they suggest. You can also go to ice.gov/SEVIS, S-E-V-I-S. I think they have a frequently asked question on this. And I think what they say is, I remember looking at it a few months back, they say what they want you to do is, in these cases, either go apply for a new visa before entering USA, or you can only do a transfer after you have joined and started school in University 1. But double-check with your DSO as well as look online. These are all the questions I had posted. Right now, let me get started with follow-up questions on what I have discussed so far. Okay? If you have any question, press 5-star on your phone. 5-star. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. Let me start with the person who logged in the earliest. Here we go. Area code 732. Ma'am, I spoke with you earlier. I remember. Go ahead. What is your question?
Okay, I got my new I-94 in the month of May, and I went to renew my driver's license just 2 days back. The lady, and I'm on L2 visa, so when the lady at the counter, when she entered the new I-94 number, it didn't go through. And my husband's, it went through, and he got his license renewed.
Ma'am, one second. Okay, can you repeat your question?
Okay, I got my new I-94 in the month of May. I'm on an L2 visa.
Okay.
Okay, I went to the DMV 2 days back to get my license renewed. My the officer, when she entered the new I-94 number, it didn't go through, and she couldn't renew my license. And at the same time, when my husband, you know, he got his license renewed, I tried this at two other DMV, and it didn't go through. What they say is they have to get in touch with the INS, and then they'll report to me in 2 weeks' time. I really don't know what could have gone wrong.
There are often mismatches between the data the DMV has and the data. I can't claim to be an expert in this. I know I've seen this problem before. But usually with time, it goes away if your status is correct. Now, what you can do is, like I said, I'm going to be recording a video on how to contact your congressman's office. It's not a bad idea to contact a U.S. congressman, and see what they suggest or what they can do for you. Because what happens is congressman's office can cut through a lot of red tape that exists between companies, between agencies, okay? So they might be able to help you better than anybody else.
Okay. So I have one more question. I also applied for the renewal of my EAD, and it's been like around 79 days that I didn't hear anything from them. I e-filed, I sent the documents, I got the biometrics done, but no update as of now. So
EADs, did you get your receipt back?
Yes, yes.
Okay, as long as you have a receipt, USCIS, their goal is to adjudicate within 90 days.
Okay.
If it goes past 90 days, get on to USCIS customer service and do a call about tracking your EAD.
But I any which ways have to wait for 90 days, right? There's nothing that can be done.
Before 90 days, they will not entertain your request.
Okay. So two things. Okay. Because for the license, I have taken an InfoPass appointment to go and meet the immigration officer on Monday. I'm not sure what's wrong with the I-94. So is this also related with the EAD, the new I-94?
My suspicion is, and I could be wrong about this, my suspicion is because your EAD has expired, that's why the DMV is having trouble. They don't realize that L2 visa holders are entitled to work incidental to their L2 status. This is a rather esoteric point of law. So maybe they don't realize that, but that's what I think is going on. Nevertheless, you're doing the right thing. Meet up with USCIS. Call the congressman's office. Let's see how it goes.
So you're going to put up a video on how to call them up and everything?
How to contact the congressman, yes.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your advice, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay. Area code 212, go ahead, please. Area code 212, go ahead, please.
Hi. I actually posted a question in your one of your blogs, which is like the more questions on AC-21, EAD, losing job, etc.
Let me ask you a question. How do you feel about getting on with me tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, everybody who has any AC-21 question can join the same conference at, 8 a.m. tomorrow? Let me see.
8 a.m.?
8 a.m. works for you, Eastern Time?
Yeah, 8 a.m. should be okay.
Let's do a conference at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. I will record that, and we can have that up for everybody because I have to do an AC-21 follow-up anyway.
Okay.
Okay?
So should I post
tomorrow
this
at 8, I will answer all your questions. Get friends and family. Anybody has any AC-21 questions, join us in the same conference call at 8 a.m., same number which we use for community conference. Is that okay?
Sure. Yep.
Let's talk tomorrow then. Okay. Area code 484. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks, Rajiv. This is regarding Uday 01 I-140 case. The one line you missed reading was the company C got closed last year or so and is no more operating.
Let me just double check. What did I miss? Give me one second. I actually read it, but somehow it skipped my mind to address that issue. I see you now.
The fourth line is what you missed.
Yeah, okay. This is a very interesting situation. If Company C has gone out of business, okay, can you still do an AC-21 transfer over? I think you can. Technically, if your I-140 was approved and your 485 has been pending 180 days, you are allowed to do An AC20.
But Rajiv, that 485 is not pending from company C.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's not the law. Okay? 485 pending through anything should entitle you to your AC21 through company, well, through the application of company C. However, there is also no doubt now that you are entitled to your 2004 priority date for EB3. No question about that.
Okay.
Because USCIS said, here's how it works. If a company goes out of business, their I-140 can be revoked. Okay? But USCIS has said, even if we revoke the I-140, we will let you keep the priority date. So it seems very clear that in any event, you're entitled to your 2004 priority date. Are you also entitled to your AC21? I believe so. I don't see any reason why you cannot get an EB, the benefit of an EB2 AC21. Okay? However, in my mind, there is absolutely no doubt that the 2004 date nobody can take away.
Okay, but AC21, since the company is not there, then whom I will, I'll be independent by myself if I
can do
it. I mean, if I apply AC21 based on EB2 because the company doesn't exist.
What you can do is, you can, see, AC, what does AC21 mean? AC21 means I am not going to work for the sponsoring or the petitioning company, I'm going to work for somebody else. So the fact that the petitioning company is out of business shouldn't matter. Okay, there's one problem that I see. The problem is this. Typically, for AC21, you file a 485 through the sponsoring company. In this case, we have not done that. That by itself is not an issue, but we don't have a final expression of intention from company C saying that they intend to hire you. They didn't give you a letter. You don't have a letter like that, and they can't do it anymore. Does that become an issue? It's a little, I mean, I can't say that I'm entirely sure one way or the other. I would suspect that we have a very strong argument that you're entitled to your AC21 through Company C just because you have a 485 pending. It doesn't have to be Company C's 485. So in my view, you are okay to do even an EB2 AC21. And you will go to any company that can offer you a same or similar job as described in your EB2 application.
Okay, that time it would be the EB2 labor job description, correct?
That is correct. Same.
Okay, but anyhow, both are similar, so that's the reason.
That's even better, because that way nobody can say, you can always take the position, hey, if you're not going to give me EB2, then EB3 is also similar, give me that. That's actually even better for you, because that way both EB3 and EB2 are protected.
At this point, I didn't get Raju.
Okay. You see, what does the law require? Same or similar? Actually, you know what, Uday, let's talk tomorrow at 8 o'clock. I want to discuss this issue in detail. It's a very interesting situation. I think you're going to be okay. Don't worry.
Okay, sure. Okay. Tomorrow, 8 o'clock EST, right? Same time.
Same standard time, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll have a discussion on this, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I have two more sets of questions. Then I'll ask everybody else if they have any questions at all. Actually, I forgot to. One more thing. Somebody had asked me a question through an email, which was forwarded to me. I believe the name is Tanay. That's the first name. The question was, I'm on H1 right now. I want to, in future, in the next few months, convert to F1. But right now, I'm not doing it. If I transfer over to a new company on an H1, does that hurt my future chances of converting to F1? The answer is not at all. Not at all. As long as you stay in status, whether you do one transfer or 30 transfers before you file for a change of status, it should not affect you. Okay. Area code 408, go ahead, please. You have a question for me? Area code 408. Area code 408.
Hi, my name is Santosh.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for the call. Thanks for giving me this opportunity, Rajiv. Appreciate
it. My pleasure.
Yeah. So my wife is carrying right now, and we wanted her mom and dad to visit us, visit some places here, and also spend some time with her, with their daughter and me. So we let them appear at the Hyderabad embassy first for the first time, both together, and they got denied. And the second time they appeared in the Chennai embassy, they got denied. And the third time, I wanted my mother-in-law alone to appear at Hyderabad, and again she got denied. So the situation now is like we are both, my wife and I are together here. We wanted, my wife got some situation here. She wanted mental help also from her mom. So is there a way you can suggest we could resolve this issue?
First of all, denials of tourist visa are very difficult to overcome. Not impossible, but very difficult. Especially when you've been denied multiple times. Okay? Typically what happens is, first of all, consulates have complete discretion in whom they give tourist visas and whom they do not. And discretion cannot be challenged. Secondly, a lot of our parents make a mistake, and everybody should keep track of this. Please note this. I've seen this happen. When asked, what is the purpose of your visit, they will respond to the consulate, oh, I'm going to help take care of my daughter or my daughter-in-law. That's true, but it should be clarified, okay? It should be clarified that they're not coming to help as a domestic help. I have seen this happen. Their consulate said, oh, they're actually going to come here and work illegally. That's quite silly, actually. In USA, do grandparents not pitch in? Of course they do. But it's just the way the case is presented. It's very clear that we are going there not to help in the sense of being a domestic servant or anything. We are going there as grandparents.
One thing, Rajiv, they've been very specific about not mentioning anything about the daughter's pregnancy here.
I'm not sure I understand. Can you say that again, please?
Yeah. So they didn't specify anything about their daughter's pregnancy here.
Okay. So the parents never even mentioned about that.
Never even mentioned. Yes.
You see, the thing is, that's good. They didn't mention it, but personally, I would have mentioned it. I would want them to mention it because that's the primary reason. Nevertheless, the tourist visa denial makes it extremely difficult to get an approval. Has any one of them been to USA before?
No.
Okay. Are they working currently or are they retired?
They have a parking there.
They are working.
Yeah, they have a business, yes. They are working, yes.
Is it a good sized business?
Considerably good size, and they're pretty, not so bad. They're pretty okay. They have some properties worth no less than 2 crores. Back in India, they have, but
okay.
They've stored all the assets as well.
What other family do they have in USA?
Two sons. Were yet to get married.
Okay. And what family do they have in India? Do they have any sons and daughters in India?
Two sons, but yeah.
Okay. I personally think this is going to be a very difficult case to win. A lawyer can try writing a letter. In the situation, but I don't think. Personally, I think you should save your money. Probably not do anything. Okay?
Yep. Okay, Rajiv. Yeah.
Sorry. Good luck. Okay. Just a second. Okay, the last of the old set of questions. Area code 313, go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. My name is Sundar. I'm the user who posted about transferring from University 1 and University 2.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
I just joined the call.
My answer to you was, of course, you can listen to the answer, that the experts in these kind of situations are your DSOs, designated school officials. So you call the University 2's DSO in their international students' office, and you tell them what you're planning to do. As far as I know, this is not a good idea. This may be illegal. Okay? If you enter using the visa of University 1 and join University 2 right away, that's a problem in my mind.
Okay.
There's also a set of frequently asked questions on ICE website. The address is ICE.gov, www.ice.gov/service. S-E-V-I-S. Okay?
Okay.
There should be an answer to this question. What I remember is that ICE wants you to get a new visa for Company 2 before you even enter.
Okay.
Or they want you to join, not Company, I'm sorry, University. They want you to join University 1, become a student there, and then apply for a transfer.
Okay.
Okay, but double check with your DSO what they suggest.
Okay, that'll be a great idea. Thank you very much. Yes.
Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay, folks, anybody has any questions on any topic related to immigration, press 5-star. Anybody has any questions, doesn't matter what they are. Okay, two people have raised their hands. Let me start in the order that they logged in. Area code 617. Go ahead, please.
617. Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, I'm actually, I asked about that H1 and H1 thing.
Can you speak up a little bit? I cannot hear you very well.
Can you hear me now?
A little better.
Yeah, actually, you have already answered that. I mean, I said that I, in future, if I want to convert to F1, and prior to that, if I want to do a H1 transfer.
Right. I don't see any problem with that.
But the thing is, let's say I apply for the F1 conversion on October for a spring 2013 intake, and I apply for the H1 transfer on end of August. Won't that be a problem? Because it will show a problem in intention.
There is a transfer pending. If you are in between USCIS adjudications, you can have a problem. Let me explain to you what I mean. Your question is, not only do I want to do an H-1 transfer, I might be doing it very close to a subsequent F-1 transfer. So what if the H-1 transfer is still pending while I apply for F-1, correct?
Let's say even if I apply for a premium transfer.
Right.
So the difference will be around 1 month? In that case?
That's not guaranteed. It can be more than that.
Yep.
And easily more than that, because they send an RFE, then you respond to the RFE.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are in between, there are two possibilities. One possibility is you applied for premium processing and you joined the second company. If that is the case, you could have a problem. But if you continue working with the old company until the H1 of the new company is approved, and then you apply for F1, there is no problem.
Okay.
So two choices are, continue working with the same company until the H1 transfer is actually approved, or take the risk, join the new company as soon as your H1 is filed instead of approved, but then converting to F1 depends upon approval of the H1 transfer first.
Okay? Got it. Yeah, I got it. And thanks for your...
You're welcome. Yes. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, I have two more questions. One is from area code 732. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm the same one with an L2 visa. Now, my husband is on L1A, and we plan to settle down here in the U.S., but unfortunately, his employer would not be sponsoring the green card. Now, what alternative I think of is both of us going on H1 because I'm also working here. So if he goes on H1, I automatically go on an H4. So if in order for both...
Hang on, let me correct you.
Yeah.
Just because he converts to H1, you do not automatically convert to H1. You also have to apply for it.
Right, no. I mean, H4 I get converted to, right? So I have to apply for H1.
No. You don't get automatically converted.
No, I have to apply.
When he applies for H1, you will apply for H1.
Okay. Okay. So now, if I go in for H1 and even he goes in for H1, now, he's been in that industry for a very long time, whereas I come from a finance background and I work as a business development manager here. So is there high chances of me getting approved for an H1, which I'm not quite sure?
If I were you, the way I would do it is, I would ask your husband's employer to file for H1 premium processing and attach your H4 with it. Once the H1, H4 is approved, then I would have you try to convert to an H1. Because that way, if the H1 is denied, you still have H4.
Okay. That's but I cannot work.
Yep.
Okay, so that's the only way to the green card.
That's the only way to the green card? Well, that's a long discussion.
Okay.
But unless you're willing to put in money as an investment, that seems to be a good way to go. Remember that out of 6 years of total H1, whatever time your husband was on L1, it will be counted out.
Okay, so we have been like around 4 years.
He's got only 2 years, so immediately he must start an H1 and immediately he must start a green card. Actually, because of the quota, he will not be able to join right away. So what you can do is, if you have an employer like that, let them start his green card even before he starts work with them on H1.
Okay. Would you have any idea what's the total number of was amount involved in this transaction?
You mean money?
Yeah, for the processing of green card.
Well, legal fees, one part of it the employer has to pay by law.
Okay.
Rest you can pay. Our fees are published there on the website.
Okay.
Fees and expenses. I don't know about other lawyers, but what we charge, I know. It's on the web.
So by next year, immediately he should start filing for his green card and then go for his H1? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because he's subject to the quota. He's not going to be able to join right away.
But yeah.
He doesn't have a whole lot of time to mess around with the with delaying his green card, so he should file a green card as quickly as possible.
Okay.
So
all right. Thank you so much, Rajiv.
Before he files an H1. Yes, exactly. Okay?
Sure. Thank you so much.
Welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right, folks, last call of the day. Area code 973, go ahead, please.
Hey, Rajiv, this is Srinivas here. I have a complicated case, so I just wanted to talk to you. I came for H1 stamping to India, and I was given a USCIS. My case has been sent back to USCIS for reconsideration. In the meantime, I applied for a H4 because my wife and kid are in U.S.
Okay.
So even my H4 was given an administrative processing stating that the.
Let me stop you for a second. Is there any allegation or suspicion of fraud about you?
I don't think so. As far as the interview has gone, I never felt that they are looking into those angles. But
all right, very good. Keep going. So,
yeah. But when am I? I did attend my H1 in Mexico actually.
Okay.
So when it was refused, I came back to India and applied for a H4. Then that is where when the H4 interview started. The visa officer was asking me, did you do any misrepresentation and all those things?
Right.
Said, no.
See, what happened was, this is my guess now. My guess is because you applied for H1 in Mexico and H4 in India, the Indian consulate wants to get the file from Mexico before they adjudicate your H-4.
Okay.
And that can take a few weeks.
Okay. So this is what has happened, and he said that, no, we're not going to pursue anything. Next day I get an email saying that you need to withdraw your H-1 until unless you do that, your H-4 process will be suspended. So I go and do that then.
Wait, I think that's an unnecessary request. I think you should talk with your H-1 lawyers and have them write to the consulate, why should you withdraw your H-1? Where does it say that? There is no law that requires you to do that.
Okay. So, well, I didn't see any option there. I was talking to my attorney, and he said that, okay, go ahead and do that if they're asking if that's a requirement from them. It all depends from consulate to consulate requirement. That's what they told me. So I went ahead and did that, and after that, I'm still pending. It's been like 2 weeks that it's still going on.
Look,
so,
hang on 1 second. Let me explain something to you. Consular administrative processing, not possible for anybody to do much about it. When they do admin processing, we have to wait it out. Unless they go beyond any reasonable time, couple of months, 3-4 months, you can then try to agitate this issue. But before that, I don't think you can do much. I know people who've been on H-1 admin processing for a year outside USA.
Right. But this is for the H-4, sir.
I understand that. I gave you that as an example, that
okay,
when somebody is put in admin processing, there isn't really much we can do, whether it's H-1 or H-4, same idea.
Okay, right. So it might take 2 months, or it might take more than that. It might happen before that also.
I hope so. I certainly hope so for your sake. Yes, sir.
Okay, got it. I mean, the reason why, because I have my wife and I have my U.S. citizen kid over there. So
I know. If you, I actually posted a small blog entry on this. We had written to some of the advisors to the president because they had requested for our office to give them some information about, I'm sure they requested other lawyers as well. But our office especially, you know, we were made a, there was a request made that what are the problems businesses are having and people are having right now in H-1 area. So I wrote a letter a couple of years ago. Didn't see much change. A couple of things changed, but not really a big change. And we used the terms like, you know, you are holding people hostage. Consulates are basically, they are like, you know, almost like dacoits, robbers, kidnappers. Once you go there, they hold you hostage for months and months and months. And by that time, you've lost your project. People like you have lost, you know, all that time that they should have with their families. But that's what we are dealing with. There's not much we can do.
Okay. So the following question that I had, Rajiv, is that I go back on H-4. And I have my I-140 approved and hoping that it would be current sooner or later by the end of this year. So can I apply for I-485 on my H-4 status?
Yes, you can apply for I-485 even though you're on H-4. No problem.
Okay. Is there any cooling in period once I go in there on a H-4 and then apply?
That's
yeah,
debatable. I would want you to wait a few months, maybe a couple of months, more than 60
days. Couple of months. Because I assume that H-4 and H-1 are dual, like you can also apply for a dual immigration also, right?
That's a very long story. I don't want to get into it. In your situation, I would rather have you just have a little cooling off. I don't think it's the end of the world, but I would rather do it that way.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason why I wanted to ask you this question is that a client is still willing to take me back into the
world.
But
you can come back on H-4, apply for change of status back to H-1, no problem.
Yeah, okay. Would that affect my 485 because you come back and you apply for a new H-1 with a different employer?
Now, look, your story is getting more and more complicated by the minute. Right. Bottom line is this. I don't know new employer. Now we're talking about an entirely different ballgame.
Right. So you're saying that I can apply with the same employer?
Why not?
Okay. Right. Okay.
Unless being revoked.
We already have. Yeah.
Unless
the reason
H1,
why.
Listen,
sorry, Raju. Go ahead.
Yeah. Unless that H-1 is being revoked, I don't see why you cannot apply with the same employer for a change of status.
Okay. Because it's already, there is a refusal case pending in there. Applying with the same employer.
Refusal is of a visa. That does not mean the same thing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Okay.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Got it.
Good luck to you, sir.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Okay, we have one more question. This will be the last question of the day, guys. And I've got to roll. Area code 201. Go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Hi. I have a quick question, actually. My 6 years on H1 are finishing in September of this year, and I have 140 approved from my employer.
Very good.
And they have filed for H1B extension. And the normal processing, and they expect to get it in by November of this year. And so my question is, can I change employers while my H-1B extension is pending?
Hang on 1 second. Your I-140 is approved, but 485 has not yet been filed, right?
No, my priority date is March of this year, March of 2012, so it's not current.
Okay with having to start your green card all over again?
Yes.
Okay. Here is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is, well, they're not going to give you, your current H-1 is expiring in September, right?
Yes, 6 years, and I-94 also, yes.
Wait. If a new employer
files
your H-1 premium processing for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
there is no problem as long as they do it, get it in the hands of USCIS before September.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Now, what has happened is you are applying for a transfer over to a new company within the life of your existing H-1. Therefore, you should not have any problem. Okay? And once you get your 3 years, only then join the new employer. Don't join them before the H-1 is approved.
Oh, okay. So I can get 3 years on my H-1 from another employer based on I-140, which is approved from current employer, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. And I don't need like the H-1 approval extension beyond September from this employer right now?
No, because you are filing within the life of this H-1. So you're not
including
that first where September has passed, an extension is pending, and you're not really in status, you're in authorized period of stay. You're right now. Get your application filed, you're fine.
Oh, okay.
All right?
Sure. Thanks, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Well, guys, it looks like there's one more question. I'll do it just this one last question, no more than. I'm having some technical difficulties. Give me 1 second. Okay, area code 973. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Rajiv. This is Srinivas here again. I just forgot to ask you one last question. This
Remind me, what was your issue, the H1-H4 issue? Visa?
Right, the H1-H4 issue, right.
Okay.
What I just wanted to ask you one last question, that is, once I come back and apply for a 485, right, would there be an effect of my H1 visa denial on my 485 with the same employer? Because
as long as there is no fraud anywhere, I don't see any problem.
Okay, got it, sir. Okay, got it. Thank you, sir.
Good luck and good talking with all of you, and I'll talk with you again in a couple of weeks, guys.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.